Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, we got a guest. Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
This hour is being brought to you by Burris Equipment. Visit them at burrisequipment.com for details. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I've been talking Bulls with you for the better part of an hour. When I am done, it will be the afternoon show, and guess who's back? Terry Bors is going to be hanging out for the next 3 days on the afternoon show. So starting at 1:50 with our crosstalk, you can hear Uncle Terry. He and Mac will be reforming the Heavy Fuel crew for 3 days here on The Score. All right. As we discussed, Tony has done a great job. He was in the room last night covering the draft lottery. One of our friends came home to cover the draft lottery. So I'm really excited that Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report is here. If he were on the phone, I would tell you that he was joining me on the Al Pamani Ford hotline. And I would also tell you that you can find 500 new or used cars at Al Pamani Ford. But he's here in studio, so I'm not going to tell you that. I am going to welcome him, and you should check out his work on Bleacher Report. He's also been quite generous with his time. He's been a guest on my LoHo Daily podcast, which is up right now on radio.com. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say it would be a shame if you had to actually tell people about the used car stuff if I were on the line.
No, I mean,
it would be a shame if you had to, it would be a real shame if you had to do that.
I think that, you know, whether it's new or used, you do Al Pamani Ford and it's all good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back in Chicago. It was a wild night last night. I don't think anybody really saw it shaking out the way it did. Although I guess with the current lottery odds, like the way they flattened it out, it's a little bit of room for chaos.
Yeah, there was a lot of chaos that was going on with everything that happened. Of course, with the Bulls picking seventh. Now, like I screamed a couple of expletives out of my back door yesterday. What was it like to be in the room when that decision happened?
Well, there was obviously a huge Bulls contingent, like a contingent of Bulls fans and Bulls people there because it's in Chicago. It's just like how, you know, they have the draft in New York. So whenever, like, the Knicks draft somebody, they get booed because there's a lot of Knicks fans there just because it's local. It was kind of the same way as in Chicago when they have the lottery in Chicago and, you know, Horace Grant, who's a franchise legend, is there on stage. He got a huge ovation. And you could just feel the air get sucked out of the room when they got announced at 7. And it's like, okay, they moved down 3 spots, which they moved down 1 spot last year and it ended up working out okay because they were able to draft Wendell Carter, who they like and I think is going to be a good player. But this is not at all the outcome that they were hoping for.
How would you describe what the Bulls are as a franchise right now in relative to the rest of the NBA? Because I think Bulls fans are trying to figure out, like, what is there to be optimistic about? So you cover the entire league. You spend a lot of time covering Portland exclusively. But what is the feeling about who the Bulls are as a franchise?
Well, they're in kind of a weird spot right now because when they did the Jimmy Butler trade 2 years ago, the whole reason they did that and to commit to a rebuild was because they felt like with Jimmy, they had maxed out as like a pretty good playoff team that, you know, was going to be competitive in the East, but was never really going to be competing for anything beyond just, you know, making the playoffs, maybe winning a series at some point. And so their whole thinking was, we're going to bottom out. We're going to trade Jimmy. We're going to go young. We're going to try to hit in the draft. And now, If they had gotten Zion Williamson last night at number one, or even if they had gotten John Morant at number two, you would feel a lot better about their ability to kind of get over that hump of where they had been before that they were trying to get over. But now, with this draft going, with the lottery going the way that it did, you're just thinking, okay, I mean, they have a solid core, like Zach LaVine, Otto Porter, Lowry Markkanen, and Wendell Carter. That's not a bad core to have to build around. But even best case scenario, all those guys stay healthy, they all grow together, they all get better. I kind of feel like they're going to max out around where they were before they did the Jimmy trade, and then they're right back to where they started, and okay, do they tear it down again and do another rebuild? And then at that point, you know, is the management team going to still be there? Or like, it's just a lot of things would have changed for the Bulls as a franchise last night if they had gotten Zion or even Ja Morant. And now they're just kind of still where they are.
What do you think of the coach? What's your thoughts on Jim Boylan?
You know, it's hard to get a read on him. Obviously, early on when they fired Hoiberg and brought him in as the head coach for the rest of the season, it was kind of a disaster early on that first week. It seemed like guys started to buy in a little bit. As far as the extension that they gave him, I feel like they probably did themselves a disservice by not at least holding off on that and looking around to see who else is out there. Because, like, okay, if they do a little search, they talk to some people. If they ultimately decide Boylan is their guy, okay, fine, that's what they decide. But you couldn't have, like, you don't think Monty Williams would have been worth a look. You don't think Ty Lue would have been worth a look. You have to at least, they haven't done a real coaching search since 2010 when they hired Tom Thibodeau, because when they fired Tom, like, they basically had been lining Fred Hoiberg up for like a year, and that deal was done within 36 hours of when they fired Tom. So they haven't really done a coaching search in almost 10 years, and now they are putting that off for at least a couple more years. I feel like even if they ultimately decide on Boylan as their long-term guy, they kind of did themselves a disservice by not at least doing their due diligence of seeing what else was out there.
First. That's where I'm at on this, that I still, no one has sufficiently explained to me what the rush was in giving him an extension, because he was already under contract for the upcoming season, a contract that you could have very easily eaten. And I don't know what Jim is making now, but the fact that you put years on him when there were going to be other options that were more proven than him, I just don't get why they were in such a rush to make something happen with him.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I guess if they do decide they want to stick with him at least for the next year, you probably do want to give him an extension, because when you have this young team, you're trying to rebuild, you're trying to get guys to figure out their roles and buy in, it's a little bit hard to go in there and say, hey, this is your coach. This is the vision that we're trying to get you guys to buy into. You guys need to fall in line behind him. And oh, by the way, he's on a lame duck contract making $1.6 million. Like, it kind of would undermine his authority to have him just be on a lame duck contract when he was, by a lot of distance, the lowest paid head coach in the NBA. And I like you, I don't know what the money is on his current contract. I would imagine it's probably still on the lower end of what head coaches are making. But yeah, I think even if they were going to extend him, you could have waited until like July or August to do it.
Absolutely. You could have waited to November. Sure. You could have waited until January to go, hey, things are moving in the direction that we want. They're responding to what he was. We gave him a training camp. The players responded to that training camp and came out and played better. He's our coach going forward. Let's extend him. It's just they do things in such an odd way, Sean. It's hard for any Bulls fan to really buy into. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, and especially when you combine that with some of the moves that they've made the last couple of years, and a lot of the moves that they made, whether it was bringing in Dwayne Wade a couple of years ago, even though that didn't make any basketball sense, or whether it was bringing in Jabari Parker last summer, where they brought him, you know, their two franchise players at that point are Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen, who are both front court players. Jabari Parker's natural position at that point was power forward. They brought him in to try to play small forward. Everybody around the entire league, this isn't even hindsight, everybody around the entire league thought that was going to be a disaster, but they basically did it because, oh, he's from Chicago, he's going to sell tickets, he's going to get fans excited. It seems like when they did the Jimmy Butler trade, they talked about, we're going to be patient and we're going to be methodical with this rebuild and we're not going to do anything rash. And then their actions so far have kind of suggested otherwise.
And with Jabari in particular, what bothered me so much about that is that they acted like they had never seen him play before. That when he did get here and he didn't play defense, like he told them he wasn't going to do, it was like they had never seen the film on Jabari Parker as an NBA player and thought that they were getting something different. And I just don't know how that doesn't bode well for your basketball IQ, that you thought that somehow Jabari Parker was going to change his player profile from what we saw it was.
I mean, it was a marketing move when they brought him in. They basically were like, he's going to sell tickets. He has local ties to the Simeon kid. And that was kind of the rationale. And I will actually give Fred Hoiberg a lot of credit, because they brought him in. They wanted to play him to play small forward. Fred tried that for like one or two games in the preseason. And then he was just like, no, I'm not doing this. This doesn't make any sense. And then he just decided to not do it. So I'll give Fred a lot of credit for that. But then it kind of led to this whole thing. And then ultimately, in hindsight, it ended up working out okay because I do think that I did like the Otto Porter trade at the time.
Sure.
When they
Me
made
too.
It. And I think that's going to be a good move for them going forward. But that's very much like a process over result or results over process type of thing, because you can say now, okay, the Jabari signing ended up working out okay because they traded for Otto Porter and he's going to be good for them. But when they signed Jabari Parker, they weren't thinking about, okay, we're going to flip his contract for something. They signed him because they thought he was going to be a good move for them. And that says something about their process, which is not doesn't reflect well on them.
If we're sitting here and looking at the Bulls, if they don't trade, them picking seventh, are there any players that you think aren't getting enough run in our discussion as we lead up into the draft, outside of Morant, RJ Barrett, and Zion, that could turn into not just good, but great NBA players?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Lawrence. I have not really, I don't watch much college basketball, so I haven't seen a ton of film on some of these guys, so I'll defer to Ricky on a lot of this stuff. But a guy that he talked about that he thinks is really, it would be a good option for the Bulls at seven is Coby White out of North Carolina, the point guard. But I don't think there's really anybody that they can take at seven. I mean, where you can say this guy is going to be a future star, this guy is going to be a future core piece. You kind of hope at this point, just with how shallow this draft is, it's basically a 1.5 player draft as far as franchise players go. And so you basically want to hopefully you get somebody who's going to be a rotation player, or even if he isn't a starter, somebody who comes off the bench, and then you try to maybe get your point guard and free agency.
Oh man, Sean, you just, I mean, isn't that what it's like? That's where Bulls fans are like, oh, we might get a rotational player. Awesome.
Yeah, but that's kind of where everybody is. I think a lot of fan bases were kind of heartbroken. I know a lot of Knicks fans who were pretty despondent when they didn't, because even though, like, you know, they're at three, so they might get like RJ Barrett or Jarrett Culver or something, and those guys are going to be good players. But it would have been a complete game changer for them if they had gotten Zion Williamson. But now that they're just kind of the gap between Zion. Another friend of mine who I trust a lot for draft stuff, who scouts a lot of these guys, if you want to know the gap in talent in this draft, in the different tiers, this guy, a guy that I trust a lot for draft stuff, he told me that Zion would have gone number one last year by a lot, including like over Luka or Trae Young or whoever. But anybody in last year's lottery would go number two pretty easily this year.
Wow.
So you're basically the difference between getting Zion Williamson and getting even John Morant, who I think is going to be a really good player. I've heard De'Aaron Fox comparisons to him this week, talking to different executives and people at the G League camp that was this week in Chicago. People think he's going to be really good, but he's not. Zion is the best prospect to come into the draft since at least Anthony Davis. Maybe you even have to go back to the Odin Durant year to get somebody who has as much of like franchise changing potential as he does. So New Orleans gets really lucky, and everybody else is just kind of scrambling and figuring out what they're going to do.
Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report joining me here in the studio on The Score. What do you think of the draft lottery process? I've had a texter, a very passionate texter, who's like, they should do two playoffs, that the losing team should do a playoff. You can run it concurrently with the other playoffs, so have your loser bracket figure out who drafts where to keep teams from completely tanking out. How can the NBA fix this, or is this a problem that doesn't need fixing?
I don't know if there's really a perfect solution. You kind of saw the way they've changed up the system a little bit this year, because up until this year, they only drew the lottery balls for the top three picks, and the team with the worst record in the league would get a 25% chance of getting the number one overall pick. This year, they flattened it out where the top three teams have a 14% chance, and then the fourth team has a 12.5% chance, and the fifth team has a 10.5% chance, and it like starts to go down a little bit from there, and then they draw for the top four picks, basically just to discourage teams from doing what Philly did for all those years under Sam Hinkie, where they're actively just not even pretending to try to put a competitive product out on the floor. And you kind of saw the system worked. It worked the way the league wanted it to, because only one of the teams with the four worst records, and that's the Knicks, only one of the four worst teams stayed in the top four of the draft. Everybody else moved back.
Hmm. You cover Portland.
I do.
The Western Conference Finals are going on. Game one, not great for Portland. They did look a little bit tired. They looked like they had, you know, heavy legs coming into game one. If they're going to win this series, how can they do it?
Well, Damian Lillard has to shoot a little bit better than he did last night. That's part of it. And it's a little bit concerning because he had kind of he kind of had not great shooting performance in the Denver series. And they, you know, their role players were able to step up and get things done when he didn't really have it going. That's really not as much of a sustainable strategy against a team like Golden State, because even with Kevin Durant out, and who knows how long he's going to be out, because a calf injury is something you don't really want to mess around with, so he might not even be back for Game 3 or Game 4 in this series. But even without him, you know, Steph Curry is the greatest shooter in NBA history. He's gonna go off. He's going to be able to do what he did last night. And then, you know, you've got guys that have been through this before and have been there. And, you know, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, these guys are great defenders. Klay Thompson is obviously an incredible shooter. Even without Kevin Durant, the talent gap is still so much. And if Dame isn't playing at the top of his game, I don't know what chance they have. I still don't think they're going to get swept. I think they're going to at least get a game, maybe two. But it's not looking good after last night.
In the Eastern Conference Final, what do you think is going to happen and why?
I'm pretty firmly on Milwaukee in terms of winning this series. Obviously they have the best player in the series, I think. I mean, it's pretty close between him and Kawhi, but I would have voted Giannis for MVP this year if I had a vote. I think Giannis has been the best player in the league this season. But I just like their depth more than Toronto's, because Toronto, you know, they have a great starting lineup, and they have, you know, their guys, you know, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, like they have guys, Siakam has been good. They have guys at the top of it. Then their bench, you know, Fred VanVleet has kind of been in and out of the rotation. Other guys have just kind of been in and out.
And Kyle Lowry hasn't really, like, he's, no. What is it that you do? You know,
right,
like,
I know. Whereas Milwaukee, now that they have, especially now that they have Malcolm Brogdon back healthy, that's a huge piece for them. But then, you know, Brooke Lopez, Nico, you know, you've seen George Hill and Eric Bledsoe step up. They just have a lot more different weapons, I think. And, you know, Chris Middleton has been awesome so far in the playoffs. He was great in the Boston series. I like Milwaukee.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I actually could even see Milwaukee beating the Warriors.
Is there anyone that you're looking forward to over this? Because now we have the combine, mm-hmm. that you're looking forward to getting a closer look at here in Chicago?
I'm really curious about Darius Garland, the kid out of Vanderbilt, who is seen as, you know, maybe the second best point guard prospect in the draft after Ja Morant. But he's a guy that people haven't really seen a lot of, because he only played 5 games at Vanderbilt before he had a meniscus injury. And then as soon as he had that injury, he had the surgery, and then he left school to start training for the draft. So really nobody has seen a whole lot of film on him. But he's a guy that, you know, you hear comparisons to guys like Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving just in terms of his ability to pull up from 30 feet and shoot off the dribble. And he's a guy that people think may be a future star, but also just there's so little info on him because he only played 5 games at the college level. So he's a guy I'm kind of interested in seeing a little bit more of.
Sean, I appreciate you coming in here and hanging out. You're going to be here like all day, right? You're going to do the No Zones podcast with Tone?
I am, and I'm going to be on with Cody, and that's going to be the first time Cody and I did a podcast since we stopped doing Locked on Bulls together. So it's going to be a little reunion for the OG Locked on Bulls listeners.
All right, I like that, man. I appreciate you jumping in, and thanks for being on my podcast, too. And
yeah.
You're doing great work for Bleacher Report, and I really want Portland to win. I really do.
It certainly would be fun to cover finals in Portland. I at this point, can't say I'm expecting Portland to beat Golden State, just because until somebody actually beats Golden State in a 7-game series, I'm not going to pick it to happen. But, you know, they take this second game in Oakland. Durant's still not back. It could make it a little interesting. I think it doesn't go longer than 6 games, though.
All right. Well, thank you. You're going to be in town, so people are going to be able to see you. Where can they find your work?
At Bleacher Report mostly, and then on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Hyken.
Very lucky with that. You got that.
It took me a while to get it too.
I mean, that's key.
This is back when I was at USA Today. I don't even remember who had it. It was some account that had like 0 followers, but it had been inactive since 2010. And then like 4 years ago or 5 years ago, when I was at USA Today, I hit up their social media manager and I was like, hey, this. I think it was at the same time that they got all of us verified. I was just like, hey, while you're talking to the Twitter people, getting us verified. I want this handle, and it's on an account that's been inactive for 3 years. Can you just get me this handle? And they were able to do it.
Nice. I like you working the system.
I do what I can. I got to keep the brand strong.
You're like the Pelicans. All right. So thanks to Sean. Check out his work on Bleacher Report, and he is going to be on some of the Scores podcast, which is terrific. He does a great job of covering the NBA. We need to take a break. So there was some stuff about Addison Russell's role on the Cubs, which we covered on the show yesterday, and apparently people weren't listening. So I'll share what Joe had to say and why it made a lot of sense to me. We'll do that next here on The Score. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, and actually at 1:50, because we'll do transition, it is the afternoon show with McNeil, and Boers. Terry Boers is going to be in the building with Mac, and you get an opportunity to listen to those guys leading you up to Cubs baseball here on The Score as the Cubs continue their series with Cincinnati. The segment is being brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. Get amazing savings during GMC Truck Month. Save 19% on a new 19 GMC Acadia and save 22% on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. For offers or details, visit anthonygurnee.com. So, a couple days ago, Carl Ravich was on with Waddle and Sylvie. And he had told those guys that he had been hearing that the Cubs' plan was to eventually move Addison Russell back to shortstop. And that kind of caused a stir amongst the people who cover the Cubs. Because they were like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. We need to ask somebody about that. Yesterday, on this radio show that I do with Joe Madden, you can hear Joe Madden on the show with me every Tuesday at noon. I asked Joe about how Addison is kind of assimilating back. And I thought that Joe was pretty clear in what he expects Addison's role on this team, at least for the near future, to be.
Wonderfully. He's, you know, he's taken to his role. He stays ready during the game. He's always ready. If he's not starting, he walks around the dugout. He's getting ready. He realizes it might be a pinch hit. He knows it might be a double switch defense. He's been great. His work's been outstanding. We just need to get him back up to speed. You can see at the plate, he's still not there yet, but he looks wonderful on defense, so I give him a lot of credit. He still knows it's everything is a work in progress, and he's handling every situation that way. He's really maturing in the dugout and among the group, so I like a lot of what I'm seeing.
That doesn't sound like a guy who's in a rush to put Addison Russell back at shortstop. And considering the way that Joe has talked about Javier Baez, it seems pretty clear that they don't want to move him.
How is this still a thing?
Tony, we tried to cut this thing off, but apparently it still has a life of its own. And when you have someone who's as respected as Carl Ravich is, it's like, oh, well, he definitely knows something or somebody.
Why do the fans want this to be a thing? Why do any reporters want this to be a thing? Why do the Cubs want this to be a thing? It should not be a thing. Javi almost won an MVP last year.
Here's why, Tony. From a metric standpoint, Addison Russell is a better shortstop than Javier Baez. Now, defensive metrics in baseball have come a long way. I still find them to be imperfect, and I think that there needs to be a marrying of objective and subjective when you're talking about zone ratings or range. I look at the subjective on this one. Just scouting the two players. Yes, Addison Russell does get two balls that maybe Javi can't get to. But he's not going to throw anyone out when he gets to that ball because he can't throw. And usually when you have a guy who's got a good glove but can't throw, where do they play? Second base, not shortstop. That's just if we're looking at the two positions. Now we add in the human aspect of it. Javier has been your shortstop since the season began. He's clearly the better athlete, and he's clearly the better ball player. There's no reason to move him unless, and I don't know this to be true. This is just me speculating. Unless Javier Baez, in conversations with Joe, Jed, and Theo, has said, guys, look, you know me, I can play wherever. Wherever you need me to play, I'll play, and it doesn't matter. I would love to think that Javier is that type of dude. I would also be totally fine if he was like, I'm this team's shortstop. I'm not going anywhere. Let that dude be in the rotation of second baseman.
One thing I fear is kind of what happened with Kyle Schwarber, where he was like, yeah, Kyle can play. Kyle can be our, I forgot the name of the starting batter.
Wait, what?
The starting batter? The first guy?
The leadoff hitter?
Leadoff.
You forgot leadoff hitter today. Yeah. Okay. The Bulls thing has really messed you up, huh?
Yes. But he said, yeah, I can lead off. But then he was bad at leading off. like, just because these guys don't want to disappoint what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be these all about the team guys, but it's okay to say no. Like, no, I don't feel comfortable moving. No, I don't want to move another spot. Yes, I'm fine where I am. I don't want to move. And that should be okay. And they should be okay with Javi saying that.
Yes. And the thing is that they do have a lot of Swiss Army knives. Guys that are willing to do whatever. Chris Bryant will go play left field if you need him to. He'll play first base if you need him to. I'm sure if you needed to put Chris Bryant to get you out of a game at shortstop, he'd do it. They got a bunch of those dudes. I mean, one's missing. Like, Ben Zobrist is kind of the best example of that, like the ultimate example of that throughout his career. He would go to the ballpark with a bag of gloves and be like, where am I playing today? Descalso is one of those dudes. They'll put those dudes wherever. But I'm totally fine if Javi's like, no, man, I got this.
We good.
We're real good. Because I'm the starting shortstop in the All-Star game this year. We're good. Let him rotate in with Descalso, or if Ben comes back, or when I need a day off, you want to pass in his shortstop? Cool. But when the starting lineup comes out on 150 of them days, my name is in the lineup as shortstop. And I don't know if there's any Cub fan that's going to argue with that point.
There should be one conversation had. Javi, we're trying to work Addison in. What do you feel? We good? Yes, sir.
Right. And Addison, we want you to continue to be a part of this team. And we're going to figure out ways to get you your at-bats. But we're going to ask you to do a couple of things where it might be a defensive replacement late in the game, or we're going to play you at second base. They didn't even want to call him up until today. They weren't planning for him. They weren't planning for Zobrist to be gone. It was a need that they had to fill. So yesterday, Theo was in talking to the beat reporter, said that whoever Ravitch had heard that from was a damn liar. And Theo didn't say that. I'm playing around with the quote, but he said that it wasn't true, that they're not going to slowly move Addison Russell back to shortstop. I'll tell you this much, if they do, maybe it won't be a problem with Javi. And I don't mean to put any of this on him. I think it'll be a lot of problems with Javi fans. And I consider myself one of those. I know I'd have a problem with it. Because it would seem just patently unfair. Like, what do I need to do? I'm El Mago, man. Don't you see me out there making plays? There are some who believe that their best defensive lineup is Rizzo at first, Javi at second, Russell at short, Bryant at third. I don't feel that way. And I don't think any concessions should be made for Addison Russell, because they've already made a lot for him. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have advanced to the Western Conference Finals versus San Diego. Game 1 and 2 will be played this Friday and Saturday night at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for playoff and ticket information. Yu Darvish is getting the start tonight. It's a Yu Darvish start. And we're all just sitting there going, come on, man.
Like, it's like a Yu Chatwood, like all the pitchers they're playing today.
Yeah. Well, that's, you have to almost piggyback Chatwood with Darvish. Like, they have to be connected.
You go to them both. You guys ready?
Because you don't know if Darvish is going to get out of the fourth inning. He might strike out 10, but you don't know if he's going to get out of the inning. I asked Joe about Darvish paring down, taking all that, those great six pitches that he has, and coming through with one game plan where he's only throwing three of them. Here's what Joe told me about that.
You know, with him, you know, there's certain days the four seamer is the better pitch, certain days the two seamer is the better pitch. The slider cutter, he's got a good curveball. You're right, he's got so much to draw from. I pretty much stayed out of this with when it comes to that because I really wanted Tommy and to nail it down with Mike Borzello. And I have my opinions, and I throw them at Tommy. I don't want to confuse you by jumping in there with all this stuff going on. I like all of his stuff. I had a pitcher, Kelvin Escobar, a couple years ago with the Angels, and Esky was a five-pitch guy, and also Jeff Niemann with the Rays. I've never seen guys with that many above average to good quality pitches, Escobar and Niemann. And here we got Yu Darvish. So I know it can be done, and both those guys had great command. It's in there, man. It's in there. We just need this the epiphany moment where everything just locks in mentally, and then it's just going to take off. You just stay with it, stay with it. As long as this man's healthy, we're staying with him because this stuff is that good.
So we'll see what we get from Yu Darvish tonight. It's about time for McNeil and Parkins on the Score. By the way, it's McNeil and Boers today. It's also time for Lakeside Bank's unique blend of technology and personal service. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. When we come back, we'll wrap up our Bulls coverage for now. And maybe for a long time. I don't like this. Don't like it. I don't like feeling this way. I don't like being angry on the radio. This is supposed to be a fun radio show. Sweet. We might wrap up our Bulls coverage today for a while. You know what someone texted? Someone was like, you know what would be a good show to do today? Is Mitch Trubisky good at football? And I say, no, sir. No, it is not the day for that. Back after this on the Score. Campy, you were out recording the I Am Fat podcast. When does that drop? When's the next episode drop?
Hopefully tonight, if not tomorrow morning.
I like the subject that you and Jay are talking about, things that are better grilled. And it's funny because I don't know if there's anything that's not better grilled. I want my dogs grilled. I want my burgers grilled. I want my ribs grilled.
Steaks are a question mark?
It's close. Steak off the grill is fantastic.
Fish.
If you want.
Fish.
Vegetables.
Don't say vegetables. It's the I'm Fat podcast. Campy came in here and said pineapples. I was like, y'all grilling pineapples now?
Yeah.
Pizza. Frozen pizza.
I actually haven't had a grilled pizza yet.
Home run in.
Is that like a thing?
Just put it in there, man. Just
yeah?
Yeah.
All right. We'll see. Every time I put a grill out, like, South Side, man, it gets stolen. I'm dead serious. Like, I haven't bought a grill in 2 years because you put it out there, like you're waiting for the coals to die down, and all of a sudden you're like, where's my grill? Oh, my grill just walked away. That's right, Kawhi.
That's the one bad thing about the new place is no place for a grill. No yeah. Outdoor space. So it's kind of rough not having a grill.
Can you give me 30 seconds on the Bulls?
It's not surprising. They don't have a plan. They wanted to go into a full rebuild, but then they didn't want to commit to the full rebuild. If they were really going into everything, you know, they would maybe look forward to next year being a much better draft, especially for point guards, and maybe try and move this pick for either a vet to help them now or for future picks, because this isn't getting that much better anytime soon. They're not going to make the playoffs this year.
That was a solid 30 seconds. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear from Terry Boers. He's going to join Dan McNeil. Heavy Fuel Crew reunion show coming up next on The Score.
The seventh pick belongs to the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, no!
Yeah, it was not a good night for the Bulls last night, but a couple of good nights are coming up for your Chicago Wolves. So if you would like to go see them play playoff hockey, I'm going to give the sixth caller to the Scores contest line, 312-591-6700, a pair of tickets to see the Wolves play in game one of the Western Conference Finals at the Allstate Arena this Friday night. For playoff and ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. If you've never been, it is a really, really good time, and the folks at the Wolves work very hard. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce to you the Heavy Fuel Crew with Dan McNeil and Terry Boers.
There he is. Look at my guy. Look at my guy just brimming with pride and just the envy of everybody in the hallways today.
I am?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
You are.
Then you need better hallways. Holy crap. Are you kidding me?
It is good to see you, man. Thanks for joining
guys.
Us today.
Lawrence, congrats, man. You're exactly where you belong. I mean, you belong part of this daytime family. And Dan McNeil, you know I love Dan McNeil.
I do.
This guy right here, there would be no me if not for him. There's several guys I could say that of over my life, but he's one of them.
Stop. I'm so happy to see you because when you walk through the hallway that is now named after you, the day is a little bit brighter.
Yes, it is.
Isn't it, Matt?
Yes.
When
true.
Terry
what he's
Bars
saying about you
through,
is true.
I mean, Terry, look, he got this outpouring of affection, and he doesn't know how to handle it.
I don't.
But I say this all the time, that for the group of guys starting with me and below, he is a beloved figure.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When he comes here, like, we're excited to see him. There's only two guys in the history of the station that I think that have that same type of pull where everyone loves them.
And Terry and Murphy.
It's definitely not. It's definitely not.
Yeah, we had lunch together.
Terry
and Doug. You were going
Terry
Doug.
And Doug.
Yeah, you're right.
So what I was saying, Terry, is that earlier I was joking. I'm like, did Terry do an audiobook to accompany his book? And I said that we should all get to do a chapter of the book. And then someone said, Murph should do a chapter too. I was like, I got a chapter for him.
There's plenty of it for him.
I got a chapter he can do.
I know you do.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if it'll be today, but I want to get to Terry's book. And he's going to sit in with me the next 3 days, today,
yes,
tomorrow,
yes,
and also on Friday. But I've read the book, and I do want to talk with him about it, and maybe when the follow-up is going to be
written. Oh, we got a busy day planned today, though.
Yes.
We got a lot of getting.
Well, we do, and I don't know.
Got a lot of getting after people.
We didn't have a show meeting today.
Don't need one. Not today.
But I don't know if I will not manufacture anger because it wouldn't be authentic. Because I'd be manufacturing it. I don't have any anger at the Bulls for what happened last night.
There's no anger.
So you don't. But maybe Lawrence can lend you some of his. Because when he started his show, beginning with Transition with Dan and Connor, the man was on fire.
My anger is not at what happened last night. My anger was the focus being put back on all the things that haven't happened leading up to last night. So that's where
your memory was jogged. You were refreshed on everything that's been driving you crazy about that team.
Here's seven for you again. And what have you been doing with that seventh pick? You're getting solid players that really have no...
Yes, and he's right. They have gotten solid players. There was nothing John Paxson said last night that's really untrue.
Agreed.
I didn't find any... I didn't think he BS'd anybody.
I agree with you.
Yeah, there was nothing specific about last night, but I've heard some anger. I've seen anger in social media. Just everybody's reminded of why they don't like watching the Bulls. Then you don't have to like them.
It's tough to do.
No kidding.
I mean, you really, I mean, that has got to be an effort beyond an effort to watch the Bulls. That's
Lawrence
tough.
Hit on something today that I've been thinking about because my youngest son is 24. He has no memory of that series against the Utah Jazz when they last won a championship, when they hoisted a banner to the Raptors, Danny Parkins' Raptors. They don't care. If they are NBA fans at that age, it has nothing to do with what they've seen locally.
Correct.
At any point in their life were they ever treated to a championship run. So you got to create a new fan base. But they are financially solvent. They have a decent product. People who go say they have a good time.
It's a good time.
And the building is at capacity.
Now they're offering
you
the world. You can sit with the coach. You can go anywhere you want to if you come to them in a game. I mean, they've gone out of their way to try to get you to come back.
I think that there are a lot of things surrounding the Bulls as an NBA entity that are good. And the experience that you get when you go to a game is phenomenal. They do an incredible job of entertaining you for 2 hours if you're not paying attention to the basketball. Now,
he's right.
Now
he's on it.
I don't know if that's the business that they want to be in, but they have accomplished that goal of being able to bring people into the tent and they enjoy themselves. Plus, if you love the NBA, here's your chance to go see it. You can go see Russ or KD or Giannis or whomever. And maybe that's enough. But it doesn't seem like Pax thinks that that's enough. If the goal is to win, then do what you got to do to win. And the your son, other people of that generation, and the folks coming up behind him, Mac, Michael Jordan to them might as well be Alexander Graham Bell. You know what I'm saying?
He's been compared to him before. I've heard that.
Was Bell also a geography major?
He likes to know where things are.
I'd have written that.
So you keep bringing out right. this myth.
I know.
And there's a statue to the myth. And people go there and they're like, not that the myth wasn't real. I mean, he obviously did all those things. But for the 10-year-old who's going to Bulls games, like, yeah. Who's that? I don't know who right. that is.
It's like until the Bears won in 85, it's like everybody was talking about Sid Luckman. And they didn't have chin straps then, did they? They don't think they had leather helmets.
I think Sid Luckman only had one hand and yeah, he was great. So, I mean, no.
What's really scary about the Bears is we were talking about Sid Luckman up until about 2011.
You're right.
Because Cutler like broke all of the records and you're like, oh, that's going to have to go all the way back to Sid,
yeah,
eh?
As much as we hate to say it, you got to say it because it's the truth. Jay Cutler is the most accomplished quarterback in the Bears franchise history. That's
that
factual.
Says more about the Bears than it says about Jay Cutler.
No question.
I mean,
about that
is I'm hoping. I still have hope for Mitch Trubisky. I still have hope.
Well, you should.
I still have hope
for that. You should have hope for him.
Terry,
have hope
is
for him.
Mitch good?
Don't see. Look, no, Terry. Don't answer that question from young Tony Gill.
Trust him anyway. You got to watch him.
You can't trust him because he's going to set you up for a trap. And let me just tell you, because I know that you're not listening to my little show every day, but I have decided that I am in no place to do the Is Mitch Trubisky Good show, especially in April or May.
Right.
Like, I don't want to do that show. So Tony's quest is to get me to do the Mitch Trubisky Good show. So he just tried to draw you into it. I just wanted to let you know that I have sniffed it out, and we are not doing that show. You respect this legend when he comes into the booth.
All-Star Weekend's coming. We're doing that show.
All-Star Weekend, I think, will be fine. Yeah. We'll do it then.
You will find out, I think, by the end of this coming season, exactly what you need to know after year three. You will know.
See,
you will know one way or the other.
Mark it down. Put it on tape.
You will know one way or the other.
That's how we're leading off that week of shows, with Terry saying that.
We are Sports Radio 670, The Score, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, radio.com station. We have Joe Cowley from the Sun-Times on to do a little
Perfect.
Bulls kicking today. Yeah.
It's just if he's mad.
Somebody's
You mad, Joe?
I feel like there's an obligation here. Somebody who doesn't like the Bulls needs to have a voice today. Somebody who really wants.
But the thing is, we all love the Bulls, though, Mac. Like, we do. Like, that's the thing.
No,
like, we want them to be good. You don't?
I don't.
So you don't have the connection.
I don't, which makes it easy for me to not get as upset as the rest of you guys. Oh, the Bulls always have been to me 100% content. They are a product. I like it when they're good because people flock to the radio.
And we had great trips because they were good.
And we had great trips, didn't we? To see the country 5 out of 6
times. Yes, we did.
Too,
so. I heard about those trips because I had just gotten here. I heard about cab rides and people sitting on folks' laps and all sorts
That's
of
right.
stuff that you could do back in the wild, wild west days of sports radio.
Yeah, so it's easy for me to be. I don't have to divorce myself from it emotionally. I don't have that connection. I never had. I feel bad for those who have, because this is an organization that gives the guy running it a license to fail. That's approaching 20 years. So.
My connection with him is obviously very different. It's just, for me, it's what gave me a chance. I mean, they gave me a chance to cover the Bulls, right? And I mean, I took the opportunity. So I will always have a soft spot in my heart for the Bulls, because without them, I mean, I don't know what I would have covered. There were no other offers coming right away, and this just happened to be a last-minute thing. So I took it. So I was always have a soft spot in my heart for the Bulls. And the people who worked there, I love the people who worked there. Always did, always will. So they are a project to me. I would love
Most
to see
Most of those people are gone, though. Right?
Oh, yeah, but his buddy Tim Hallam's still there.
The great
Tim Hallam. My guy. They're still there, yeah. But I mean, I think when, from my perspective, is a little bit of Where are you without the NBA? Well, probably nowhere. I mean, I really needed some net. Even at that time when the Bulls sucked, when the bus rides were horrid and they hated me to play. You know what I mean? It didn't matter. It didn't matter because I finally got to do something I wasn't sure I could do, and I did it. And got to know everybody in the organization pretty well and made enemies, made friends, whatever you want to know. Mm-hmm. And I will always have that soft spot because that's how it happened. I mean, okay. It started there with the Bulls. I mean, that's where it began. And if I sucked at the Bulls, and I knew I didn't because like a year in I had 3 job offers. Mm. You know, so a year in I thought, well, I don't suck at this. So this is a good start because you're never sure until you do it. You can be confident, you can swagger, you can be, oh yeah, I'm covering the Bulls now, kiss my ass. No. I don't think so. I don't think so. And I wasn't that way.
Do you know Reggie Theus?
I do. Oh boy, that's a piece of work there. But see, that's a piece of work.
That is the beauty of having Terry in here this week. From someone who covered those horrible Bulls teams before Jordan showed up, then covered Jordan throughout his tenure when he was a writer and people.
Sure.
Terry Bors was a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times
for a long time. On the ground floor with MJ.
And then to live through the Derrick Rose stuff that Pax and the crew love to come back to as a radio talk show host.
Yep.
This show today, you've got the right partner today.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of history. Terry also can comment on when baseball, and Pat Hughes was talking about this last night, when you used to be able to throw at the runner, and if you'd hit him, he was out. Terry can talk about that era. Because I think baseball needs to resurrect that.
I'll tell
era.
You later about Mushroom Cap Anson, too, if you want to get to it. I'll get to that, too.
All right, I am getting out of here. I am looking forward to this show and Terry Bors being reunited with not just Dan McNeil, but also Chris Tannehill.
Oh, man.
Baby, you guys are going to have a good show. So I'll see you tomorrow at noon. Terry, as always, good to see you.
Good to see you, my friend. Love you.
See you, Lawrence.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.